Okay, I have nothing to disclose. I don't have any personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months. I'm going to talk, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the literature review, but of course, as you know, anytime you work on a paper, you first look at the literature, and there's really been an increase in literature on international social work, education. A lot of it's been on field placement. There's a real focus now on human rights and social work education. And I've been working with many, many students over the years. I also represent the International Federation of Social Workers at the UN, and I have staff students placed with me there. And I found that more and more students want to change the world and are very interested in international. But there's some students that are very involved in their local communities, and often students have said to me, "Well, there's such programs here. You know, Dr. Congress, aren't you interested in poverty? You know, in East Harlem, you know, you're talking about all these international programs. You know, what about like right here in our own city?" There's not much literature in this area. I did find one study, and it was done by people at Howard University, which, as you know, is a historical black college, found that many students of color weren't interested in international work because they really felt that the focus should be on working with poor communities here in the United States. And another issue was they had often had limited funds for international travel, earlier experiences, or like, you know, middle class students. Well, they went with their families here and there, but you know, poor students may not have had opportunities like that. So, in terms of working with students, I mean, I thought, and this is true for all students, as we know, they're adult learners. So, what do adult learners like to know? Is what's really closely related to their own experience and what's more relevant to their current practice. And I thought of three ways to help all students kind of link the global and the local. Number one, and I'm not spending a lot of time on this, but in terms of disease transmission patterns, I mean, everyone knows about the flu, right? You know, people, there's big campaigns to have a flu injection. Everyone knows someone who's had the flu. Everyone's worried about it. This is from October 8th, 2013. And it's probably changed now that it's November. And this is one way to really begin to interest students more in terms of global health conditions. It's not like the flu is something that happens right there in your city, like in Boston, you know, or in New York City. It's really around the world. This is really interesting, and I'm not going to spend time talking about it, but this is in October. I'm sure the picture will look very different even this month, and I'm sure by December, January, it's going to be like very, very different in terms of the incidence of flu. Now, also, I mean, this is another area. Students certainly know about HIV/AIDS and are working with people with HIV/AIDS, and this is another way to make them, to help students become more aware of HIV/AIDS around the world. Also, students sometimes think, oh, Ebola and other plagues, that only happens like in Africa. That doesn't happen here. You know, in New York City or Boston or San Francisco, only over there. And I mean, as we know, all diseases are only a plane ride away. I mean, these are just a couple of. I mean, I was very impressed by Spillover, my newest book that I've read about it, and I just think it's interesting. As students often can become more interested in like public health issues and infectious disease issues through books like this and movies. The first area is really to talk about like transmission patterns and how we're one world. The second issue has to do with field placement, and I think in every field placement, every school of social work, we have students working with immigrants. And it's not only in urban areas, In fact, refugees are more likely sometimes to be relocated to rural areas. Now, just a few, you know, demographic. You see, there are more immigrants here in the U.S. than, you know, than in any of those other countries listed. And where do social workers meet immigrants? And you can see all the different agencies where we work. Then this is just a little bit about there are 40 million immigrants in the United States, and who are they? And they vary: naturalized citizens, green card holders, refugees, undocumented people. And this is even a more detailed list, which I'm not going to go through, but I wrote a book with a lawyer on social work with immigrants and refugees, so I had a crash course in law, you know, in terms of all the different categories. And so I think it's important in working with students who are working with immigrants and refugees that they have some understanding of the legal status of the clients they're working with. And where do immigrants come from? Most, as you can see, come from Mexico, but from many other countries. Now, then I developed, and I've spoken a bit about this before, and I'm not going to go into it intensely here, but I've developed an assessment tool to try to understand immigrant health. And I call it the CHAT, the Stanford Cultural Health Assessment Tool. And basically what I'm, you know, saying is when you have students working with immigrants currently, it's important for them not just to think of the current health condition of immigrants, but to think of what immigrants' health was like in their country of origin, and then also in terms of transit. And that's a little diagram I did. And it builds on this culture gram, which I had done before. And in terms of looking at immigrant health before they migrated, I mean, these are just some health issues they may have encountered. Food, and I should say water shortages, also economic hardship, malnutrition, hunger, disease, torture, fear, loss of family members, and how much were those push factors that contributed to them deciding to migrate. This is coming here. For some, it's a plane ride away. For others, you know, through the desert. Look at, I mean, migrants and what they've done, especially in war-torn areas, and or by boat. I think I should go back on that. And then I've also thought about a kind of link between climate change and migration. How many migrants come from, like, southern places to colder climates, right? And what that is like. And I became very aware of this. I was asked to go to speak in New Hampshire, and there were a whole group of refugees from Somalia that had been relocated to New Hampshire. And what that was like for them, and also contact with public child welfare. A mother sent her children off to school without coats and boots, and there was a big snowstorm that day. So the social worker was asked to call up public child welfare. What kind of mother, you know, in the wintertime in New Hampshire doesn't check the weather for her son? But it was just, you know, she just didn't occur to her that there might be this huge snowstorm before the end of the day. Then you want to think about, with current immigrants, what's been the effect of malnutrition and post-traumatic. Then I just wanted to say a little bit about some of the common beliefs is that immigrants might be less healthy. They had poor health when they came here. And here they may have limited access to health care, even with the Affordable Care Act. And there's a big question about how much is it going to apply to undocumented immigrants. A big question, are they healthy or less healthy? And I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this, but there are some who think that immigrants really are healthier when they come. The longer they stay here, the sicker they get because of their diet and lack of exercise. And as you know, I mean, obesity is really is linked to diabetes and cardiovascular problems. My third main point, as I start to run out of time here, is it's not just enough to make to help students become more aware of some of these issues in working with immigrants. Really, I think it's really important to engage students in advocacy activities. And one way to do this is to really help them become very aware of some of the issues with immigrants. As we know, this is very much part of our codes of ethics, and another area that I've done some work writing on has been ethics. I mean, that's from our current code of ethics. By the way, that should be 2008. The newest one is 2008. And it's basically about social workers should be involved in social political advocacy work. And also is in the public health code of ethics. And I think it's real important for students to become very aware of some of the institutions that we have, and some of the processes here don't really provide equal access to immigrants, especially immigrants that are undocumented. Concerned about the Affordable Health Act. I noticed I called it Health Care Act, but Affordable Health Act, right? I mean, and some of you may be real more expert on it, you know, than I am, but I can't really see things for undocumented people in the Affordable Health Act. And then another big area, and I know my time is about up, is the DREAM Act. This is a major issue with youth, and a lot of students have become very involved in this advocacy effort at school. In New York, we're still working on passing a state DREAM Act. I think Massachusetts, I checked, for those from Massachusetts, did pass it in 2012. However, we really need something on the federal level. Then the increase of hate crimes and also microaggressions is a big issue. I think it's important for students to become aware of. And this is just a summary of some of the different advocacy efforts that students can become involved with. And so these are my references, which I will be happy to send you. So thank you.